Welcome to Disc 5 of the Marriage Max production of Marriage Fitness. Now, here again is the author, Mort Fertel.
Move from me to we, marriage assessment. List 9 decisions you are responsible for making on a regular basis. For example, vacations, family diet, children's schooling, children's play dates, investments, insurance, entertainment plans, holiday plans, and work-related decisions. Next to each decision, rank the extent to which you include your spouse in those decisions based on the following scale. 0, don't include at all. 1, include a little. 2, include a lot. Add your score and measure it against the following scale. 0 to 7, out of shape. You're missing an amazing opportunity to connect with your spouse. Make a commitment to ask your spouse's opinion about decisions you face. Include them in your life. It may not help you with your decisions, but it will help you with your marriage. 8 to 14, average. You could improve your marriage significantly by increasing your spouse's involvement in your decisions. Including your spouse now is probably a choice for optimization. Make the choice of love. Include your spouse more, whether you need to or not. 14 to 18, marriage fitness champion. You include your spouse well in your decisions. I bet you're connecting nicely, too. Note any areas you listed above where you can increase your spouse's involvement. How to make decisions. Business owners often ask their employees for their opinions regarding certain decisions. Why? The boss probably has the most experience and information with which to base the decision. He probably doesn't need advice. Why do business owners take the time and energy to include their employees in certain decisions? A good business owner asks their employees for their opinion not only to seek insight, but to increase team spirit too. As employee involvement increases, so does employee commitment. Involvement creates connection. Tell someone what to do, and they feel like an employee. Ask their opinion, and they feel like a partner. A smart business owner also lets his employees influence his decisions regardless of the quality of their advice. It's easy to utilize advice when it's helpful, but a wise business owner knows how to utilize employee advice not only for its quality, but for the impact utilizing it has on the employee. The more an employee influences their company, the more they connect to it. If employees are recommending a decision that will cause the company to lose 20% of its business, obviously the boss needs to exercise his authority. However, many business decisions are not critical. When a company decides about suppliers, health plans, office decor, retreat location, advertising mediums, and computer brands, the opportunity to involve employees may be more important than making the right decision. In fact, the right decision may be the one an employee recommends, not because it's the optimal choice, but because the impact on employee morale outweighs the fact that there was a better choice. One way to facilitate your move from me to we is to involve your spouse in your decisions. Solicit your spouse's opinion and utilize it whenever possible. Let your spouse influence you. Make decisions together. The point is not necessarily to arrive at a better decision. The point is to get intimately involved in each other's life, to connect, and to create love. A good marriage requires spouses to have roles. You may be responsible for planning the family vacations while your spouse makes the investment decisions. It's healthy to have a division of responsibility. However, it's not healthy to exclude each other from the areas for which you're responsible. You may not need your spouse to make your decisions, but you need your spouse for love, and love comes from making decisions together. Making decisions together does not mean you have equal say. Many areas of your life will have a final decision maker. If you work in investments, then you probably make the final investment decisions. but you should discuss the investments with your spouse. It doesn't matter if your spouse knows the difference between a stock and a bond. It's not the advice that's important. It's your connection. A long time ago, I visited a condominium apartment I considered buying. On my way in, I met a man who was on his way out. I asked him what he thought of the apartment. He said the shower had great water pressure and that his wife was looking at the rest of the apartment. He boasted that the water pressure was all he cared about. I remember being impressed with their compatibility. I imagined him saying to his wife, "Whatever you want, honey." I realize now that that couple may have been compatible, but they were also disconnected. I'm sure his wife got the apartment she wanted, but I don't think she had the marriage she wanted. To what extent do you and your spouse include each other in decisions? Do you seek each other's advice? I once worked with someone who never made a significant business decision without consulting with his wife. His wife had no official position in the business, nor did she know much about it. But he wouldn't make a decision until he spoke with her. They were partners, not simply in business, but in life. The best decision you can make is the one that results in love. For love, you don't have to decide correctly. You have to decide together. It's usually better to make the wrong decision together than to make the right decision alone. If you have love, you can live with any decision. If you're disconnected from each other, nothing will be right anyway. Some couples are disconnected because they divide responsibilities and don't involve each other in their areas. Other couples have the opposite problem. They fight about every decision. Some people are so concerned about getting their way that they destroy their marriage in the process. Did you ever go to bed angry because your spouse wouldn't watch the program you wanted? Or both of you watched what you wanted, but in separate rooms? If you got your way, but disconnected from your spouse, you won the battle and lost the war. There's nothing more important than your connection to your spouse. If you fight about a decision and win, you may end up making the right decision, but doing the wrong thing. You never know how a decision will turn out. You may think you're right, but it may turn out wrong. You can't control the outcome of your decisions, but you can control the love you create when deciding, and that will determine the outcome of your life. Making the right decision is unpredictable. Making love is a sure thing. What do you think? Exercise 3.5. Pick one area of your life in which you make decisions regularly without consulting your spouse. Involve your spouse in those decisions and let your spouse influence the outcome. The purpose of this exercise is to help you form a new habit that will eventually impact all the areas of your life in which you make decisions. Therefore, choose an area you make decisions frequently. If you make investment decisions once a year, investments are not a good choice. If you're responsible for the food shopping, then decisions about the family diet might be a good idea. I have a friend who's a high-powered entrepreneur. His work is very stressful, and he has a lot of money at stake every day. He prides himself on never bringing his work home with him. He refuses to discuss anything about his business with his wife, and he insists that this is the best approach for his marriage. But it's not. He leaves his work at the office, but not his stress. And his wife has no idea what's going on in his head. She feels excluded from a major part of his life. She knows she can't help, but her wish to be included is not for practical purposes. She just wants to connect. It would be so easy for him to share some of what's going on at work and to even ask her opinion about some of his outstanding issues. She may not solve his business problems, but including her would solve one of his marriage problems. Summary. When you marry, you choose your spouse. But that choice includes the future of your spouse, who you don't yet know, your fate. And to succeed in love, you have to commit to both, Rachel and Leah, your choice and your fate, the revealed and the unrevealed. Step 3 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan for connecting your cores and building phenomenal love is to embrace your spouse's shortcomings, uniqueness, and challenges. Step 3 is to move from me to we, to get involved in each other's lives. Here are 5 ways to move from me to we. 1. Move your circle of life. Get more involved in one of your spouse's hobbies or interests. 2. Pick a hobby, any hobby. You and your spouse select the hobby and do it together. 3. Make room for love. Select one of your hobbies or interests that your spouse is not involved with and eliminate it from your life. 4. Be a team. Invite your spouse to help you fix one of your problems or flaws. 5. What do you think? Ask your spouse their opinion before making decisions. Chapter 7. Save Yourself. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan. I once heard a violinist perform on a New York City subway. It was obvious he had many years' experience and training. His fingers changed positions lightning fast, and the bow raced up and down the strings at every possible angle. He even knew how to tap the bass of the violin to produce drum-like sounds. His passion and talent caused me to wonder why he was playing on a subway and not in a concert hall. But then the music started to bother me, and I realized why he was a street performer and not a professional. There was something critical missing from his music. He could make almost any sound with his violin, but there was one thing his energetic performance lacked: silence. He could play any note, but he couldn't seem to pause between notes. His performance was like a musical run-on sentence. Great music is not simply sound. It's a combination of silence and sound. A master musician knows not only when to play, but when to pause. Everything in life requires a balance between silence and sound. In other words, you have to know what to do and what to refrain from doing. A friend has to know when to offer advice and when to just listen. A business owner has to know when to invest and when to say no. A writer has to know what to say and what to leave to the reader's imagination. Parents have to know when to get involved and when to back off. A healthy society requires the same balance. Every citizen has both responsibilities and prohibitions. We have to pay taxes, dispose of our garbage, and properly care for our children. We are not permitted to steal, speed, or cause bodily harm to others. Your marriage requires the same balance. To create a phenomenal marriage, you need to do certain things: put love first, give presents, and move from me to we. But you also need to refrain from doing certain things. True love is a combination of initiating certain actions and ceasing from other actions. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan teaches you how to refrain from doing things that could interfere with your connection to your spouse. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan is to save yourself. Clear your cache. In most cases, couples lack true love not only because they don't do what is necessary to connect, but also because they do things they shouldn't, which impede them from connecting. For example, if you're having an affair, besides the traumatic effect of betrayal, you can't connect with your spouse. It doesn't matter if your spouse is aware of the affair or not. The problem is not only your spouse's feelings, the problem is your ability to connect with your spouse. If you connect with someone else, then your soul is not available. An affair is an obvious example, but there are many things that prevent couples from connecting. Playing a computer game obsessively can be the culprit. Your relationship with your mother could be the problem. Anything or anyone you let deep inside you can crowd out your spouse. A soul can only have one mate. Consider a married salesman who was prospecting a huge account managed by a woman. In an effort to win her business, he began to cultivate a relationship with her. He took her out to lunch and asked her about her business as well as her personal interests. He discovered that she read books on spirituality. Whenever he saw related book reviews, he clipped it and mailed it with a nice note. He phoned her regularly for business and always asked about the book that she was reading. Once he learned the title, he bought the book and read it too. He emailed her questions about the author's point, and she happily offered her opinion. She referred him to other books, and he took her advice and read them too. Eventually, she gave him her business, and their professional interaction created even more opportunity for them to connect personally. Over time, genuine warmth developed between them. Instead of a handshake, they greeted each other with a hug and a kiss on the cheek. On her birthday, he subscribed her to a spirituality book club. They talked and emailed about each other's personal lives in addition to their professional correspondence. When he had an argument with his boss, he called her to vent. When she had a bad date, she complained to him. The further their relationship developed, the more their lives intertwined professionally and personally. Although their relationship was not sexual, their friendship satisfied many of his needs for intimacy. He felt an exciting energy whenever they touched, hugged, or kissed. He put a lot of thought into every email he sent her, and he checked his email box frequently in anticipation of her reply. He felt close to her. She became important in his life. They were always in touch. They shared time, interests, meals, emails, opinions, and some physical contact. They made a connection. Since the relationship was professionally based, he thought it was appropriate and convinced himself that it didn't interfere with his marriage. His wife knew about the relationship and it disturbed her, but what could she say? It was business. They were just friends. She had opposite sex friends too. But every time he climbed into bed with a book about spirituality, she felt he was going to bed with another woman. In fact, he seemed to lose interest in her sexually, and they never talked about the problems he had with his boss anymore. Something changed. She didn't have the same role in his life anymore. She felt displaced. You don't have to have sex to be unfaithful. Emotional infidelity damages marriages too. The commitment to sleep with one person only guarantees you monogamy. The commitment to be with one person is what you need to create a phenomenal marriage. The chances are good that you already connect using some of the steps and exercises suggested in this book, but with someone other than your spouse. Who do you talk to the most during the day? Is there someone you spend quality time with each week? Is there someone you find yourself touching or kissing regularly? Is there someone to whom you send thoughtful emails, gifts, or media clippings? Do you go on vacation with someone other than your spouse? Do you share a common interest with someone? Do you solicit someone's opinion regularly? Or do you invest yourself in work or a hobby and connect deeply with it? There are universal principles which determine how to make a connection with someone or something. They work regardless of where you employ them. If you employ them with your spouse, you create love in your marriage. If you employ them elsewhere, you will create a connection that will interfere with your marriage. The principles are fixed. Where you apply them is up to you. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't be committed to your work and have other relationships. There's no problem with either. But there's a big difference between being committed to your work and being connected to it. There's a big difference between having healthy relationships and having other soulmates. To create phenomenal love, you don't have to isolate yourself, but you do have to save yourself. True love is a result of a soul connection, and that can only happen if your soul is available. You can't share your soul and still have true love with your spouse. Love is soul full. Like most awesome things in life, it's all-encompassing. Love is like a giant computer program. If you want to open it, you need your entire RAM available. For phenomenal love, you have to clear your cache. You have many emotional needs, including the need to connect. If you satisfy those needs outside your marriage, you won't satisfy them with your spouse. If you connect with someone or something else, your spouse will find you emotionally bankrupt. It's not that you are emotionally bankrupt. It's that you spent your soul elsewhere. The key to love is to remain available to your spouse. You have to save yourself. Don't let anyone else get to your soul. Spend it wisely. Spend it on love. Spend it on your spouse. Next time you're upset and you need to talk, don't call your sister. Talk to your spouse. Next time you feel sexually aroused, don't massage your friend. Wait until you're home with your spouse. If you have to go to the corporate retreat, don't go alone. Ask if you can bring your spouse. If you're surfing the internet and your spouse comes home, don't stay online. Turn off your computer. Connect with your spouse. Your soul is indivisible. It can't be shared. You have to preserve it for one person. It's like a long-distance telephone provider. You have to pick one. You have to offer someone an exclusive. Your primal yearning for connection originates partially from the unity you experienced with your mother. Your quest for love is your quest to replicate that experience. You had one mother. You can only have one soulmate. The problem that most people have is not that they don't know how to connect. It's they don't know how to limit their connection with others and preserve their soul for their spouse. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan for building phenomenal love is to save yourself for your spouse. Save yourself marriage assessment. Answer yes or no to the following questions and compare your score to the assessment scale given afterwards. 1. Do you have opposite sex close personal friendships? 2. Do you have same-sex close personal friends with whom you regularly share your feelings or intimate details about your life? 3. Do you keep in touch with ex-lovers? 4. Do you share your personal life with colleagues or clients? 5. Do you flirt? 6. Do you fantasize about anyone other than your spouse? 7. Have you ever been unfaithful? 8. Do you have a hobby, interest, game, sport, or activity that interferes with your connection to your spouse? 9. Is there anyone besides your spouse that you have physical contact with regularly? 10. Do you have any family members with whom you regularly share your feelings or intimate details about your life? 11. Is there anyone other than your spouse that you give to regularly? 12. Do you dress provocatively? 13. Do you have any addictions? 14. Do you ever share good news with someone other than your spouse before sharing it with your spouse? 15. If an attractive person flirted with you, would you engage them and enjoy it? Calculate the number of times you answered yes and compare your score to the following scale. 0 to 3, marriage fitness champion. You're physically, emotionally, and spiritually faithful to your spouse. Congratulations. Still, ask yourself if you fall short in any area and if you have room to improve and continue to work on it. 4 to 8, average. You could save yourself a lot more and intensify the connection you have with your spouse. You're probably not aware of how damaging the connections you're making outside your marriage are to the relationship with your spouse. 9 to 15, out of shape. Your focus is outside your marriage. You're borderline unfaithful to your spouse, either physically or emotionally, or both. You need to redirect your focus to what's most important. Quit all the extracurricular. It's draining your marriage. Caution, same-sex friends. It's obvious that you cannot connect with your spouse if either of you are having an affair. By now, you're more aware of the problem with emotional infidelity, too. And I think we all know at least one marriage that broke up because someone was obsessed with work, a hobby, drugs, alcohol, or food. In many cases, it's easy to see how a connection outside your marriage interferes with your love. But the potential problem with same-sex friendships warrants its own discussion. Conventional wisdom says that same-sex friendships are harmless to your marriage. But if infidelity can be emotional or sexual, then you can be unfaithful with a man or a woman. If a deep connection to work, a hobby, drugs, alcohol, or food, inanimate things, can occupy a person's soul, then so can anyone, regardless of their gender. I know two women who think they're friends, but they're really soulmates. They talk on the phone incessantly and share their most private thoughts about everything from sex and money to addictions and personal hygiene. They speak to each other immediately upon waking and before going to bed. They're completely tuned in to every aspect of each other's lives. Their friendship fulfills their strong desire for intimacy, but it ruins any chance of them connecting with their husbands. There's no room for their husbands in their souls. They're filled up with each other. They tell each other everything. They never want to tell the story twice. Even when they tell their husbands too, it's not the same as when they tell each other. The second person told is second. They feel excited to tell each other. They feel obligated to tell their husbands. Where do you think they connect? Friendship can offer intimacy, but not ultimate fulfillment. Only love can complete you. And to create love, your soul has to be completely available. There's nothing wrong with healthy friendships that include occasional personal discussions and thoughtful gestures, but you should not make a soul connection with anyone other than your spouse. If you think you have friendships that interfere with your marriage, change it. Stop doing the things that connect you deeply. Don't stop being friends. Just stop being emotional lovers. Free your soul. Make yourself available for your spouse. How to love your parents and your spouse. Chapter 1 discussed the original connection you had with your mother, your gradual separation, and your subsequent yearning to connect with someone else of the opposite sex. The process of growing up includes separating from your parents because it's a prerequisite for finding true love as an adult. The problem that some people have connecting with their spouse is that they never sufficiently separate from their mother or father. When you closed the big deal or got the big promotion, whom did you call first to share the news? I know someone who called his mother instead of his wife. It wasn't a calculated decision. It was a reaction based on his connection to his mother. That phone call told much more than good news. It was telling about a problem in his marriage. He was not available to his wife because he was connected to his mother. Some people speak to one of their parents a couple of times each day. Now, there's nothing inherently problematic about speaking to a parent frequently, but sometimes people's connection to a parent interferes with their connection to their spouse. If someone had a similar connection with a friend of the opposite sex, I might advise that they stop speaking. Of course, I would never suggest not speaking to a parent, but an adjustment to a child-parent relationship is sometimes necessary for the benefit of one's marriage. The Bible says, a man should leave his father and mother, bond with his wife, and become one flesh. This refers not only to a physical departure, but an emotional separation too. Why doesn't the Bible just recommend bonding with your spouse? Why does it recommend leaving your parents too? Because one is not possible without the other. To deeply connect with your spouse, you first have to leave your parents. Of course, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't have a healthy relationship with your parents. The Bible also says that you should honor your mother and father. It's one of the Ten Commandments. But the question is, what is a healthy relationship with your parents? Since that's not the subject of this book, I'll answer the question by stating what a healthy relationship with your parents is not. It's not one that includes a deep soul connection. That's the goal of your relationship with your spouse, and your soul needs to be completely available to accomplish it. What's the nature of your relationship with your mother and father? Do you think your relationship with either of them interferes with your connection to your spouse? If so, how can you modify your relationship so that it's healthy and respectful without it occupying your soul? Hold back. Exercise 4.1. Physical fitness isn't just about adding elements that improve your health, like exercise and more fruits and vegetables. It's also about subtracting elements that are not compatible with your goal. Could you really call yourself healthy if you exercised faithfully but continued to smoke and eat at fast food restaurants? Marriage fitness, like physical fitness, asks you to stop certain activities that are unhealthy for your marriage. I want to warn you. You may find the following five exercises more difficult than the exercises in the rest of the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan. The other exercises in the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan ask you to do something. The following five exercises ask you to refrain from doing things. As difficult as it is to begin a new discipline, it's usually more difficult to break old habits. However, the more you succeed implementing the exercises already discussed, the easier it will be for you to implement the following five exercises. As is the case with the entire Marriage Max 4-Step Plan, to succeed with Save Yourself requires a consistent consciousness. I suggest you review this chapter regularly, attend lectures and seminars, learn it with your spouse, meditate on the idea, and talk about it with your friends and family. I also recommend Emotional Infidelity by M. Gary Newman. Emotional Infidelity is an excellent book that discusses comprehensively the topic of this chapter. On the other hand, you cannot rely exclusively on the right attitude. Correct thinking is not enough to create love. You need a discipline to help you actualize your intentions. Here are five exercises for you to employ that will help you save yourself. When I lived in New York City, I bought the newspaper from the same street vendor every day. In the 30 seconds it took to complete the transaction, we chatted briefly about the weather or last Sunday's football game. We spoke to each other every day, but we never developed a connection. On the other hand, on our first date, my wife and I talked for hours about each other's family dynamics, career dreams, and personal problems. We made a connection in just one evening. When you spend time with someone, there is the possibility for a connection, but it won't happen unless you share your inner life. People connect when they share thoughts, feelings, fears, hopes, and dreams. No one ever fell in love talking about the stock market. Life requires you to relate to many people. Your boss, your barber, your manicurist, your housekeeper, your butcher, your accountant, your neighbors, your family, your friends, the librarian, your clients, and salespeople. You should, of course, strive to have productive and healthy relationships with everyone in your life. But be careful not to get too personal. Don't talk about your problems or ask for personal advice. If you need to have a personal discussion with someone, try to include your spouse. If that's not possible, limit the frequency of your discussions with this person. Save your inner life for your spouse. Be careful not to connect outside your marriage. Some people go to the hair salon for a therapy session. They might argue that no one listens to them at home, so why does it matter what they reveal during their appointment? But it does matter, because in order to connect with your spouse, you have to be available. If you're not available, then of course your spouse won't want to listen. In the depths of your spouse's desires is the need to connect. If your spouse senses that listening will connect you, they might listen. If not, they won't be interested. Everyone needs an outlet for their personal problems and feelings, but it shouldn't be on the racquetball court with your friend. Your spouse should be your outlet. Where you reveal yourself is where you will connect yourself. Save yourself for your spouse. The more you hold back with others, the more you will need your spouse. You won't talk to your spouse because you feel obligated. You'll talk because you need to talk. And you'll connect with your spouse because you saved yourself for them. Of course, this works best when both spouses are tuned into the exercise. If one spouse is saving themselves but the other is not physically or emotionally available, then hold back will be more challenging. In this case, I recommend holding back as much as possible anyway, keeping your soul available, and encouraging your spouse to learn about Put Love First, step one of the Marriage Max four-step plan. Then, your spouse might step into the space you made available for them. There will be plenty of times when you feel that you need advice or input from other people who offer a unique perspective or a particular expertise. I'm not suggesting that you should never consult with others. Consult with your spouse first. Think about whether or not you really need additional input. And when you do consult with others, be sensitive to whether or not you're approaching them for their advice or to connect. It's very common for people to reach out to others under the guise of seeking counsel when in fact they are seeking to connect. My wife and I look forward to our talk charges, super talk charges, date nights, romantic retreats, business meetings, and what do you think opportunities. We rarely reveal our inner life to anyone except each other, so we need time to talk. Sometimes I can't wait to talk to my wife because I have a lot on my mind or I need advice. I need an outlet. I talk to her, and it's with her that I connect. Do you share your inner life with someone other than your spouse? Do you do it occasionally, or does this person serve as a regular outlet for you? Is there a compelling reason why you need to share your problems or feelings with anyone other than your spouse? Or could you hold back? If there's someone other than your spouse with whom you think you have a connection, talk with this person about your desire to connect with your spouse and explain why you need to hold back. Now, turn to your spouse. Please do not touch. Exercise 4.2. There's an insightful scene in the movie Dr. Zhivago. Lara boards an electric trolley, walks towards the rear of the car, and brushes shoulders with Dr. Zhivago. Both their heads turn and their eyes meet. They feel something special. The camera cuts to the sparking wires above the trolley. This scene is effective because the writer and the director know that everyone can relate to Lara and Dr. Zhivago's encounter. A simple touch can be electrifying. One day I saw an old friend in a restaurant. He shared with me that he was engaged to be married. I congratulated him and asked him how he met his fiancée. He said that she came to his office and made an appointment with him for a massage. I asked him when they were getting married, and that's when the story got more complicated. They didn't have a wedding date because she was still married to another man. I cautiously asked him if he was sure he wanted to marry a woman whom he met while she was in the throes of a divorce. He corrected me and explained that when they met, she was actually content with her marriage. She was not in the throes of a divorce. But after a few sessions with him, they could not deny the electrifying energy between them. From the moment he laid his hands on her, something magical happened. A passionate love affair evolved. Finally, she decided to divorce her husband and marry my friend. As discussed in Chapter 4, touch is more energizing to a relationship than most people realize. Affairs don't begin with two people lying naked in bed. They begin with a gentle rub, a harmless kiss, or a warm hug. You don't have to massage someone's entire body to make a connection with them. Just as a touch charge with your spouse sends power to your core, touching someone else sends it away. Touch is like glue. It bonds. If it were a product, it would need a warning on its package. Use with caution. Bonds instantly. Has no regard for circumstances or appropriateness. In the song He Touched Me, Barbra Streisand sings, "Suddenly, nothing is the same." She understands the power of touch. Making physical contact with a person is like making a deposit into a bank account. Something builds up between you, and the more you touch that person, the more invested you are in them. Furthermore, like a deposit, you can only make it into one bank. If you invest your touch with someone else, your marriage gets shortchanged. Your soul is like one side of a zipper. There's only one counterpart. Touch is one way to zip up with your counterpart. The more you touch someone else, the more you zip up with them. The less physical contact you have outside your marriage, the more you will be available to your spouse. This may seem like a strange idea to you at first. It certainly conflicts with social norms which allow casual touching, hugging, and kissing. In many environments, it's even acceptable to be overtly sexual. But in most environments, it's also normal to get divorced. If you're skeptical, test it for yourself. Monitor your feelings when you touch or are touched. Take an honest survey of some friends. Do you really feel nothing when someone puts their arm around you? When you get your hair washed at the salon, is it the same experience regardless of who washes it? Or do you feel something different if it's an attractive person of the opposite sex? Did you ever get a professional massage? Do you have a preference for a man or a woman? Why? It's normal to have desire for physical contact with the opposite sex. It's also normal for some of that desire to be satisfied by what most people would consider socially acceptable touching, hugging, and kissing. But if you save yourself for your spouse and release all that sexual energy with them, wow. I try not to have physical contact with any woman except my wife. I get my hair cut by a man, and when I greet women, I don't hug or kiss them. My wife doesn't ever wonder about any social contact I have with other women and where it might lead. She also doesn't worry that I won't desire her. I'm human, and she's my only outlet. Of course I'm attracted to her anyway, that's one reason I proposed. But this ensures that my physical desires, which could be partially met by other women through socially acceptable contact, are channeled 100% toward my wife. This practice occasionally interferes slightly with relationships I have with other women. But I believe that having socially acceptable physical contact with other women would interfere with my marriage. In other words, I have a choice. Compromise my marriage with my wife or the relationships I have with other women. For me, it's an easy choice. And in the long run, my relationship with other women is better too. In almost all cases, the women I know understand and respect the sanctity I extend to my wife and our marriage. In fact, I believe they want their husbands to extend the same exclusivity to them. Limiting physical contact with your spouse probably seems like a strange idea, but that's only because you don't do it. Here's my suggestion. Try it. Limit your physical contact to your spouse for 1 week. For 1 week, don't touch, rub, hug, or kiss anyone of the opposite sex, except your children and your parents. If you need to explain yourself to anyone, either tell them about your experiment or say that you have a cold. Then unleash all your stored up energy with your spouse. This one's for you. Exercise 4.3. As discussed in Chapter 5, giving creates a connection to the person to whom you give. Therefore, it's important to guard the frequency with which you give to anyone other than your spouse. I know a man and a woman who regularly forwarded to each other one-liners or jokes that are emailed to them. They share the same sense of humor, and these email exchanges are the basis for their constant contact. Every once in a while, they send it to their spouses too, but it's an afterthought, and their spouses know it. These gestures appear harmless, but they're cultivating a connection that crowds out their spouses. Instead of sharing these one-liners and jokes with each other, they should share them with their spouses. Their spouses may not appreciate the jokes as much, but they will appreciate the connection much more. Are you giving presents or your presence to anyone regularly other than your spouse? Are you forwarding emails or mailing articles to someone else? Do you buy flowers or thoughtful gifts for someone else? Do you feel a connection with anyone you give to regularly? If so, redirect those gives to your spouse. TV fast. Exercise 4.4. "Honey, can I talk to you?" she said. "Wait until a commercial," he mumbles. "What's wrong?" she inquires. "Nothing," he says. "I'm just trying to watch a program." "It's after 10 o'clock. I haven't seen or spoken to you all day, and the kids are finally asleep," she responds. "Can you talk to me for a minute, please?" "What do you want to talk about?" he says, without taking his eyes off the TV. "Could you turn the TV off?" she asks in desperation. "Fine," he says, as he reluctantly turns it off. "What do you want?" Whether this resembles an occasional evening dialogue in your house or not, the TV is probably interfering to some extent with your marriage and the intimacy you might otherwise have with your spouse. Let's face it, if you're facing the TV, you're turned away from each other. Do you or your spouse collapse in front of the TV at the end of the day? Do you fight about which program to watch? Do you battle over control for the clicker? Are you sure the TV is bringing you pleasure? Or is it causing you pain? Even though the TV is in front of you, more often than not, in the case of marriages, it comes between you. People get very into their TV programs and sporting events. Talk about connecting. Sometimes people are so connected to what they're watching that they don't even hear their spouse talking to them. Talk with your spouse about experimenting with a TV fast. 1 week with no TV. Use the time to turn toward each other. My wife and I tried this and decided to get rid of all the TVs in our home. I would have to write a separate book to describe the magnitude of the positive impact that I believe that decision had on our marriage, our children, and our entire family life. Now, before you jump to do the same, try a week-long TV fast. At the end of the week, review with your spouse how you felt about not watching any TV. How was your life different? What was the effect on your marriage? Discuss what actions you might want to take based on your conclusions. Dress for success. Exercise 4.5. There's an expression, it's business, not personal. And the two are different. A woman in business probably has two types of clothes in her wardrobe. She has conservative clothes for work and a strapless dress for certain personal occasions. Why wouldn't a woman wear a strapless dress to a business meeting? Because it's not good to mix business and pleasure. A strapless dress is too personal for business. Wearing it would facilitate an emotional connection with her colleagues instead of a professional one. Conservative outfit, on the other hand, promotes a more detached, business-like relationship. Do you see how the mood of a relationship is established before anyone says a word? Two people connect or keep their emotional distance depending on how they dress. The more provocative your attire, the more you connect with people of the opposite sex. But connecting with others interferes with your connection to your spouse. As soon as someone looks at you desirably, you begin to connect with them. And usually, both people feel it, both the one who looked and the one who was gazed upon. You don't have to talk or touch to begin a core connection. The eyes are the window to the soul. Dress for success means not to dress provocatively, except when you're in private with your spouse, in order to avoid extramarital connections. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't look good, dress fine, and be well-groomed. The issue is whether or not your attire is provoking an emotional connection to, or the appropriate distance from, the opposite sex. Less provocative dress maintains the appropriate distance and safeguards your soul. How do you know if your attire is provocative? There are a couple of clues. If your intent when you get dressed is to display your body or attract attention to yourself, then you're probably on the wrong track. If your outfit reveals parts of your body that people usually only see in advertisements for intimate apparel, you've crossed the line. If you have to lie on your bed in order to button your pants, then you might want to consider buying the next size. You should strive to dress well, refined and attractive, but not provocatively. My wife, for example, dresses very stylishly and always looks good. She just doesn't wear miniskirts, halter tops, deep V-necks, or tight pants. I'm sure men think she's put together, well-groomed, and beautiful. But her dress, like the wedding ring on her finger, sends a clear message about her availability. And that is her intent. The same principle applies to men's clothing. I encourage physical fitness as well as marriage fitness. But men should not wear clothes that show off their muscles or otherwise might provoke women to connect with them. Think of your appearance as sort of a red light, green light message to the opposite sex. What message are you sending? Is your appearance causing you to connect with people other than your spouse? How are your fashion choices affecting your marriage? Most people's wardrobe choices are motivated by fashion trends and peer pressure. But think about it. What mood is your clothing setting for your relationship? Are you trying to solicit an emotional reaction with your fashion choices? Are you trying to attract others? Or are you saving yourself for your spouse? Do you get a thrill being noticed by people? Is it exciting to have someone look at your body? Do you thrive on attention? You can still have your thrill, but get it from your spouse. Let your spouse satisfy your need. You only need to turn one head. Tell your spouse this is for your eyes only. And put on something no one else gets to see you wear. Some men unbutton their shirt and loosen their tie after work before they go home. What does that say about whom they're trying to impress? If you're a man, what about doing the reverse? Before you come home, button your top button, not your tie, and brush your hair. The woman you want to look best for is home, not at the office. You can look good without being provocative. There's no reason to hide your attractiveness, but there's every reason to cover your body and safeguard your soul. Dress for success. Don't dress provocatively. Save yourself for your spouse. Summary. True love is a combination of initiating certain actions and ceasing from other actions. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan is to save yourself, to cease from certain activities that interfere with you connecting to your spouse. You can't share your soul with someone else and still have true love with your spouse. Here are 5 exercises to help ensure that your soul is available to your spouse. 1. Hold back. Don't share your inner life with anyone except your spouse. 2. Please do not touch. Touch creates a bond between people. For at least 1 week, don't touch anyone of the opposite sex other than your spouse, your parents, and your children. 3. This one's for you. Don't give your presence to anyone other than your spouse. 4. TV fast. Don't watch TV for 1 week. Then, discuss with your spouse a new TV frequency policy for your home. 5. Dress for success. Don't dress provocatively. Conclusion. You now have a 4-step marriage fitness program that includes 20 exercises. Like any fitness program, the key to success is consistency. Going on a diet for a few weeks accomplishes nothing, but changing your eating habits can transform your health. The same principle applies in marriage fitness. To succeed, you have to be consistent. The 4 steps and the 20 exercises have to become part of your lifestyle. In a few moments, I'll present a 14-week implementation schedule designed to make marriage fitness part of your lifestyle. The 4 steps and the 20 exercises discussed in this book are too much for anyone to implement into their marriage immediately. It has to be done gradually. Like all great feats, it's accomplished one small step at a time. This 14-week schedule will help you take those steps and lead you to full implementation. Successful implementation. There are 4 keys to successfully incorporating marriage fitness into your lifestyle. 1. Begin now. 2. Go slow. 3. Own it. And 4. Keep implementing. The first key is to begin. Take action now. Reading, listening, thinking, contemplating, discussing, it's all good. But if you want to make a difference in your marriage, you must do. If for some reason you're not thrilled with the 14-week schedule, make your own. But whatever you do, begin now. Take the first step. Begin at least 1 exercise today. The second key is to go slow. The quickest way to fail with the entire plan is to fail with the first part of the plan. Start small so you can succeed and feel good about your efforts. A friend of mine is inspired periodically to begin exercising. He means well and intends to change his lifestyle, but in his excitement, he lifts more weights in his first workout than he should lift in an entire month. He's so sore afterwards, he can't return to the gym for the rest of the week. His inspiration turns to discouragement, and he quits. Treat yourself to positive reinforcement. Start small and succeed with whatever you do. The third key is to own it before you progress. It's not enough to succeed with an exercise for a day or two. You have to make sure you own it before you add more steps or exercises to your marriage fitness program. Every exercise and step has to become part of your lifestyle so that your success won't be jeopardized when you increase your program. The following schedule is a guide. If you don't feel ready to move on when the schedule suggests, then don't. Add to your program only after you own everything you've started. The fourth key is to keep implementing more exercises and steps until the entire Marriage Max 4-step plan is part of your lifestyle. In other words, keep moving. Don't let your marriage fitness program get stale. Don't stall before full implementation. As soon as you own what you're doing, do more. A 14-week implementation schedule. Week 1. Talk charges. Schedule your first romantic retreat and photo op. Week 2, touch charges. Week 3, date night. Week 4, super talk charges. Week 5, business meeting. Week 6, intimacy interviews. Week 7, gives. Week 8, move your circle of life. Week 9, pick a hobby, any hobby, and make room for love. Week 10, be a team, and what do you think? Week 11, hold back. Week 12, please do not touch. Week 13, this one's for you, and TV fast. Week 14, dress for success. And finally, don't forget to schedule your spouse's birthday party. Full summary. Marriage fitness is like physical fitness. It gets your marriage in shape. Marriage fitness solves existing problems, prevents future problems, and unleashes a powerful energy in your life. Love is the most awesome experience in life because it fulfills our most basic need, the need to connect with another person. But falling in love is a gift from Mother Nature, which doesn't last forever. When love fades from your relationship, so does the ecstasy from your life. You also experience flaws in your spouse and incompatibilities in your relationship. But neither your spouse nor your compatibility changed. Your love changed. And that changed your experience of everything. Make the choice to connect again with your spouse. You connected deeply when you fell in love. You can do it again. This time, it won't be a gift. You'll have to make it happen. But when you do, when you reconnect, everything will change from frog to prince. Love is a golden lens through which life looks wonderful. Love quenches your deepest desire, and it is there that you find ultimate fulfillment in marriage and in life. There are two parts to your existence. One, your character, which is the role you play in life. Your character is everything you know about yourself, including your character traits, personality, appearance, health, career, physique, social life, family life, finances, abilities, disposition, and your outlook on life. Two, your soul. This is your essential self, the core of your existence. Your character changes over time, like compact discs in a player. However, your soul never changes. It experiences the changes of your character, but remains constant. It's fixed, while your character is in flux. It's like the compact disc player. This distinction is crucial because in order to make the connection with your spouse that transforms your marriage and your life, you have to know what to connect. Character compatibility is nice, but it has very little to do with true love. On the other hand, when you and your spouse become soulmates, when you connect at the core of your existence, the golden lens appears, and your marriage and your life are transformed forever. True love is about becoming soulmates, not roommates. Becoming soulmates requires effort. It takes time and energy. True love is a verb, not a feeling. There are four steps to building and maintaining phenomenal love in your marriage. Step one of the Marriage Max four-step plan is to make your spouse and your marriage the absolute highest priority in your life, bar none. In other words, step one is to put love first. Put love first is a prerequisite for all the other steps. Your marriage has to be the highest priority in your life in order for you to have the time and the energy for steps 2, 3, and 4. There are 8 exercises to help you put love first. Exercise 1.1, talk charge. Have loving personal talks with your spouse 5 times each day for a minimum of 1 minute. Exercise 1.2, super talk charge. Have a loving personal talk with your spouse each week for a minimum of 25 minutes. Exercise 1.3, touch charge. Make loving physical contact with your spouse a minimum of 3 times each day. Exercise 1.4, date night. Go out alone on a date with your spouse at least once each week. Exercise 1.5, romantic retreat. Go on vacation at least 3 times per year alone with your spouse for at least 3 days and 2 nights. Exercise 1.6, business meeting. Avoid as many logistical and business discussions throughout the week as possible and discuss all of them during a weekly business meeting. Exercise 1.7, photo op. Put photos of your spouse in your wallet, your office, and your gym locker. Exercise 1.8, birthday party. Plan an extravagant birthday party for your spouse, and then invite only your spouse. The second step of the Marriage Max four-step plan is to give presents. You're probably accustomed to the feeling of love inspiring you to give to your spouse. But the correlation between love and giving works the other way too. In other words, giving builds a connection between you and your spouse and creates the experience of love. And ironically, when you give, you get everything you need. There are 2 exercises to help you give presents. Exercise 2.1, intimacy interview. Extensively interview your spouse in order to create an inventory of giving opportunities. Exercise 2.2, give. Give from your inventory at least 3 times each day. Step 3 of the Marriage Max four-step plan for connecting your cores is to embrace your spouse's shortcomings, uniqueness, and challenges. Step 3 is to move from me to we, to get involved in each other's lives. When you marry, you choose your spouse, but that choice includes the future of your spouse, who you don't yet know, your fate. And to succeed in love, you have to commit to both, Rachel and Leah, your choice and your fate, the revealed and the unrevealed. Here are five exercises to move from me to we. Exercise 3.1, move your circle of life. Get more involved in one of your spouse's hobbies or interests. Exercise 3.2, pick a hobby, any hobby. You and your spouse select a hobby to do together. Exercise 3.3, make room for love. Select one of your hobbies or interests that your spouse is not involved with and eliminate it from your life. Exercise 3.4, be a team. Invite your spouse to help you fix one of your problems or flaws. Exercise 3.5, what do you think? Ask your spouse their opinion before making decisions. True love is a combination of initiating certain actions and ceasing from other actions. Step 4 of the Marriage Max 4-step plan is to save yourself, to cease from certain behaviors that interfere with connecting to your spouse. You can't share your soul with someone else and still have true love with your spouse. Here are 5 exercises to help you ensure that your soul is available to your spouse. Exercise 4.1. Hold back. Refrain from sharing your inner life with anyone other than your spouse. Exercise 4.2. Please do not touch. Refrain from physical contact with anyone of the opposite sex other than your spouse, your parents, and your children. Exercise 4.3. This one's for you. Refrain from regularly giving gifts to or having thoughtful correspondence with anyone other than your spouse. Exercise 4.4. TV fast. A minimum of once a year, turn off the television for an entire week. Exercise 4.5. Dress for success. Refrain from dressing in a way that will provoke an emotional connection from the opposite sex, except in private with your spouse. The end and the beginning. Creating love in your marriage is the most important accomplishment you can achieve in your life. A phenomenal marriage enhances every other area of your life and is the only achievement that can offer you ultimate fulfillment. If you and your spouse become soulmates, you will have everything. If you do not, nothing else will be enough. You could have money, cars, clothes, jewelry, friends, power, fame, intelligence, wit, family, strength, and beauty. But if you do not deeply connect with your spouse, you will squander the potential of your marriage and your life. Like your physical fitness, the health of your marriage deserves serious attention. The Marriage Max 4-step plan can help you get into shape and realize the potential of your marriage and your life. You're at the end of this audio program, but the beginning of marriage fitness for you. Just as with physical fitness, listening to a program about marriage fitness only works if you translate what you learn into your life. Inspiration is a lot more common than discipline. Implement what you learned now. And for more inspiration, as well as opportunities for other marriage fitness programs, including books, a free newsletter, free lectures, marriage coaching, and live seminars, visit www.marriagemax.com. Love is not a mystery. Like your physical fitness, the success of your marriage is governed by universal laws. Marriage fitness translates these laws into 4 simple steps. Step one, put love first. Step two, give presence. Step three, move from me to we. Step four, save yourself. I did not invent the universal laws of love, but marriage fitness organizes them so you can harness their power in your marriage. The laws of love are like the laws of gravity. They hold you back until you understand them. Then you can go to the moon. The Marriage Max 4-step plan is like rocket boosters. Now you can go to phenomenal love. Enjoy the journey.
We hope you have enjoyed this audio production of Marriage Fitness, 4 Steps to Building and Maintaining Phenomenal Love. To contact the author, email mortfortel@marriagemax.com. For more information about Marriage Max or Marriage Fitness, including books, audio CDs, free newsletters, lectures, marriage coaching, and speaker services by Mort Fortel, please visit our website at www.marriagemax.com. This audio production or parts thereof may not be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means without permission, except in the case of brief quotations for articles and reviews. Please address all inquiries to Marriage Max Incorporated.